You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
It's Monday, 17 August. We've got Chinese house price index data due 9 a.m. Monthly data has been negative every month since May 2022. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from MoneyWeb Studios in Gauteng, Johannesburg. On the show today, Nkunza Sanlam, Private Wealth. I want to touch two things. Sovereign debt yields keep rising. Nick and I have touched on this a bit, and it's all just going the wrong way. On the other end, consumers getting squeezed. We're looking for more fuel price increases in September. Where does that leave the SA consumer? More importantly, SA consumer stocks. Shehul Mantini, Director, 91. US investment returns. Mega IPOs are and reduced buybacks increase the investment pool. The number of stocks out there that we can buy, literally, does that negatively impact returns going forward? And then we're going to chat with CFI Group. What we need to do as traders, looking beyond rate decisions, looking beyond individual data points and managing the process. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more global opportunities through their partnership with JP Morgan Asset Management. Morning headlines, MoneyWeb, Transnet ramps up Cape Town port preparations for fruit export season. New labor plans, increased rail capacity, aim to prevent a repeat of last season's disruptions. Business Day, Stadio trades at a premium as investors bet on growth. Morning markets, US was red, S&P down a 0.1%, NASDAQ down a 0.5%, that of course Friday. East is all green, Sydney 0.1% higher, Tokyo 0.2% higher, Hong Kong 1.5%, Tencent 1.7% up. Commodities green, gold futures 4,452, Brent 88.84, platinum 1,762, palladium 1,335. The rand is 16.18. Bitcoin 63,300. Top 40 opening call, green open 170 points or 0.16% higher.
MoneyWeb Now on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting now with Nkunza Sanlam, Private Wealth. Nick, appreciate the early morning. As I said in the intro, U.S. was sovereign debt, but let's touch on U.S. almost $40 trillion as of Thursday's data, up almost $3 trillion in the last 12 months. You and I have touched on the yields. We've got, you know, the U.S. 10-year, when it went through 4.5% back in April of last year, we said that was a number to watch. It's 4.685. We've got Japanese at records. We've got the UK at 30-year highs. This is all around bad for economies. Higher interest rates coupled with high debt sucks money out of global economies.
Yeah, morning, Simon. Morning to the listeners. Yeah, I mean, I think it's difficult to ignore these bond yields. I mean, the world's benchmark risk-free rate, which is the US 10-year, when it resets this high, almost every other government around the world, including us, has to pay more. And that's what they call the transmission mechanism. But I mean, more importantly, and I've always said this, is it's often when you least expect, you've got to keep an eye on these US 10-year treasuries, these auctions that come out every now and again. When they do auction, what are holders prepared to pay to hold U.S. risk? And last week, we had a 10-year treasury auction. It sold at the highest yield since the global financial crisis back in 2008. Wow. and that's basically the market, the clever money, as they call the bond market, Simon.
Yeah, yeah.
Telling Washington that money isn't free anymore. And that repricing is now flowing straight through to every other government market. I've concluded.
How much is it policy? How much is it inflation fears or blends off? Because, of course, we're sitting in a, you know, I forget the number now, but like the Fed hasn't been at that 2% target in what, 3, 4, maybe even as long as 5 years. And that puts us in a new era.
Yeah, 100%. Look, I think it's a number. First and foremost, I mean, obviously the borrowing, and you know, when as you pointed on your intro, when you start getting to $40 trillion of debt, at some point, I think, you know, the market turns around and says, look, this is unsustainable. The other key thing to note is that the American government, their balance, what they're spending to service that debt that they hold is now the largest point on their balance sheet. And that's typically what you would see in an emerging market. You look at it and go, no, we can't look at this. But this is the world's biggest economy. So, but also just to pivot onto that, I mean, you know, this is not a U.S. story alone. I mean, this is a global bond story. UK's 30-year gilt trading at levels we last saw in 1998. I mean, Japan this morning, I just saw a headline crossing the wires, the 30-year back over 4%. I mean, the common thread everywhere is the same. There are bigger deficits, there's stickier inflation, and investors, bondholders, are demanding more to hold government debt for longer. That's the basic, the general gist of it.
Yeah, and that then sucks that money out. But to your point, it is a global phenomenon. And of course, what, 6-7 years ago, we had negative yields, which was crazy in of itself. But how things have changed. Quick change jobs quickly. I was having over the weekend looking at Central Energy Fund, their fuel prices. We're getting petrol up some 70-odd cents, diesel 280. No. To be clear, still some time to go to September. But the local consumer remain, it's tough out there, remains under pressure since the war started. Way back in February, and not good for consumer stocks, particularly discretionary.
No, it's not. I mean, the cost of the fuel cost of the pump today, higher borrowing costs as well. We mentioned the bonds on the intro.
Yeah.
And this is where it bites the ordinary consumer on the street. I mean, you know, diesel's jumping again. I mean, and diesel's what moves food onto the shelves into ShopRite and Spar and all the rest of it. You know, so transport inflation is now running at over 12%. Those higher borrowing costs from even, and you add on to the higher borrowing costs from the bond moves, you've got a consumer that's been squeezed from both the fuel pump, the shopping basket, the debt side, etc., and it's visible. And this is not just a Wall Street story. This is the South African story. You know, inflation is getting sticky. Everyone's getting squeezed. The middle class, especially. I mean, just look at some of those numbers from the recent updates from the likes of our retailers, Simon, especially upper end, like Woolies, for example. That is the middle class getting absolutely squeezed at the moment. Yeah. So this diesel price feeding through, not a good story for the consumer.
Nick Kunzis, Online Private Wealth. We'll leave it there. Appreciate the early morning time. Our poll today on LinkedIn is around that consumer budget. How's your household budget holding up? I mean, it's definitely getting squeezed to some degree. And I suppose unless, now, even if you walk everywhere, as Nick says, man, that what you're buying from ShopRite is costing you more. Have your vote. Have your say. LinkedIn. Let your money benefit from experience with StanLib Asset Management. Find out about StanLib Global Select Fund, which follows an investment discipline that has delivered results for 3 decades. Think you found the perfect investment? Let's check. Join MoneyWeb editor Rek van Niekerk, the Money Summit, where he will reveal the warning signs of today's biggest investment scams. From fake trading platforms to promises of guaranteed returns, learn how to protect your money before it's too late. Tuesday, 1 September at the Sandton Convention Center. Register for free using the promo code MoneyWeb. Visit moneyweb.co.za and secure your seat today.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
Chatting with Shiel Martini, he's director at 91 Investment Institute. Shiel, appreciate the time again today. A fascinating research report out by you and your colleagues. Over the last 2 decades, U.S. companies have been buying back more stock than they've been issuing. In other words, the pool of shares has literally been shrinking. What's been available to investors? This is astounding numbers. I'd never thought of it. Intuitively, when you say it, it makes some sense. But this must also have an impact on investable returns. A shrinking pool, more money chasing, less shares, supply and demand.
Yeah, thanks, Simon. Really good to be speaking with you. Yeah, so when people talk about the impact of AI on the equity market, they frequently go into the technology, you know, what is the end state return on invested capital and so on. We have tackled it from a slightly different perspective, which is what is the impact of all the share issuance that's coming onto the market? Now, we all know that in the past, you know, 10 years, 15 years, really since the GFC, we have had very strong net buybacks. And the buybacks have contributed to returns in the equity market. And that's why the equity market returns have been so consistent. And now that process is reversing. So that's quite significant.
And there are a couple of points. I mean, we're seeing with the CapEx spend, we're seeing some of the buybacks disappear. We're also seeing these mega IPOs, SpaceX already out there, Anthropic and OpenAI potentially both coming, potentially about $1 billion. We've got Alphabet, who actually issued script as well. We're suddenly seeing not an avalanche, but a lot more stock coming to market. In other words, increasing the amount that's available.
Yeah, that's right. It's a massive amount. Figures that we have at the moment are about $4 trillion within the next 3 years. And keep in mind that the IPOs, when they initially happen, are usually on lowish floats. Mm-hmm. And then what happens is over a period of 1 to 2 years, you get exits from the insiders. And that's why you see a process where, you know, the amount of float goes up by 5 or 6 times within that span of time. So what is starting today is actually going to continue drip, drip, drip to at least 2028. And, you know, that should play an impact on the returns.
Were you able to quantify sort of what level of return the market got from the shrinking pool of issuances?
Yeah, that's right. So in the last decade, you know, if you take in repurchases, issuance, and, you know, take a net figure, you get a 0.7% improvement to returns from de-equitization. We think that with the IPOs that are coming out, you're going to get a negative 4% impact over a period of time. And that is as significant as the numbers you saw in the late 90s. So, you know, a lot of institutional asset managers, they will start from future returns. And the future returns for the US equity market were already relatively low because of the high starting valuation. So our numbers are around 3%. So if suddenly you get a negative impact of 4% because you're expecting what happened in the 90s, that wipes out all your expected return. You know, it's not a certainty. These companies could do very, very well.
Sure.
But what I'm saying is the last time we have seen this level of issuance, you got a pretty bad outcome. So convince me, please, this time is different.
I like that. And to be clear, we're not calling a market top by any stretch. In a sense, you're kind of asking the question, and it's what you said in that last conclusion there, which is where do the returns come for the next decade in US equities? And it's becoming a harder question to answer. To your point, we're at extremely elevated levels, which usually tell us the next decade's not great. You bring this into the equation, it starts to bring some really hard questions into where are those returns?
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, the one reason you don't want to be calling the top is because you could be a 97 instead of 2000. Right, so you've still got three more years to go. You know, another reason is you've still got a huge amount of issuance that's coming through. You know, I think the SpaceX issuance was less than 10% of the float. That should go up massively over time. And the third reason is, you know, maybe this time is different and maybe these companies are just incredibly super profitable. And, you know, all the capital that's being deployed is going to earn this kind of excess returns. However, what you can definitely know at this point is that, you know, the operational earnings better deliver because you've suddenly got a massively increased capital base, you know, which is expecting a return on that equity. So the hurdle has been raised. Just in the same way, if a company issued shares, you would make sure it was getting some kind of return for that share issuance, right? It's exactly the same thing at the index level.
Yeah, no, 100%. So then a last question, a conversation I've had with you, your colleagues, other guests on this show, is the emerging market versus developed market debate. And the tilt has been shifting towards emerging markets, although it's been a wild year. South Korea, SK Hynix, I mean, I didn't see that coming in the EM space. But this kind of plays into that EM preferred over DM debate.
Yeah, so I mean, EM is incredibly resilient. You know, you've seen yields go up in the US and actually EM yields have been pretty steady. So I think the story in EM is real resilience. I think what is potentially happening now is the performance of non-US over US. So that includes EM, but it includes other countries as well. And you saw that happen last year where actually the US equity market, despite doing really well, actually underperformed Europe, underperformed East Asia. So I think that could very well continue just given the starting points and given the fact that, you know, a lot of the AI supply chain is actually in Asia, in EM, and given the fact that if this technology is as revolutionary as it looks, it will start to impact a lot of companies that don't seem like tech companies in the first place, right? It should transform the small, medium-sized, you know, restaurant booking system. It should transform a variety of other industries that are in the market. So that will have an impact on Europe. It will have an impact on EM. It will have an impact on Asia.
I'll leave it there. Shumantini, he's a director, 921 Investment Institute. Appreciate the time.
The Standard Flexible Income Fund delivers capital preservation and consistent top quartile inflation beating returns. Let your money keep working with Standard Asset Management even after you retire.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
Chatting with Francis du Plessis, CEO at CFR Financial Group South Africa. Francis, appreciate the early morning time. An excellent piece from yourself recently. You were talking around the July data points. We had had a June CPI pop up at 5%. Day later, MPC decision, keep rates unchanged. But you made a great point in the article around it's less about the actual headline number for traders. It's more around getting the expectation that market responds to. The numbers are important. They drive the narrative, but understanding the narrative is key for the trader and what we need to become proficient at to become successful as traders.
Good morning, Simon. Yes, absolutely.
If we look at this, I mean, the details behind the number, I suppose they matter, but it's that dissecting of it that we need to be careful of.
Very correct. I mean, if we have a look, yes, there's a few things that were important, but it wasn't simply that, you know, the rates stayed at 7%. We also need to have a look at quite a few of the other things that happened with regards to, you know, what was the vote split? I mean, two MPC members wanted another hike. Inflation risks were tilted upwards. Inflation was still far above the Reserve Bank's 3% target. And all of these things can actually still significantly affect what happens within the market.
And that's the key point. We see a headline number. Myself and other commentators will talk around that headline number, but it's often the numbers in the background which are driving process that we need to perhaps be cognizant of. And maybe it's more just around sort of watching the outcome, less than worrying what the absolute number is.
Absolutely. I feel, you know, most traders a lot of the times try and anticipate that initial spike, which, I mean, it's very difficult to do because there is so many things going on within the market at the moment where, you know, yes, data can come out and then there are algorithms that react within milliseconds. Mm. Liquidity can thin, spreads can widen, slippage can increase. There's so many things that can happen. And as a trader, you can get yourself into a lot of risk very quickly, where a little bit, a couple of minutes later, I mean, this is when we actually start digesting. What was the vote? What was the statement? What is future forecast? What is the government, the governor's comments? And all these things can then lead to, you know, what is the market going to do going forward?
That's actually a great point. I used to trade FX on around non-farm payroll data, and often the correct trade was to actually fade that initial move. There would be a pop, and then a few minutes later, I mean, when I say a few, like maybe 2 or 3 minutes later, literally start to reverse the other way.
100%. I mean, non-farm payrolls are still one of the top traded news events globally, and it's exactly what you say. You know, we even saw it literally about a week ago where markets spiked up with the initial results and then literally within like 2 minutes started reversing.
Yeah.
Because of the fact that then we are actually starting to process what really happened.
And that then comes back to this is around, you mentioned it there, it's process. And for traders, you know, we tend to review the outcome. Did we make money or not? But actually, it's about reviewing that process. Did we do our process well? If we are consistent with that, more often than not, we'll make profit. And over time, we will be profitable traders.
Absolutely. And even, you know, talking about profit, this is for me, one of the reasons or one of the ways that we can actually judge success. And I mean, profit doesn't necessarily mean a good trade, and having a loss doesn't necessarily mean a bad trade. I mean, you can make money from an absolutely terrible decision, and you can lose money despite following the most perfectly reasonable process. So, I mean, on that, for me, it's instead about, you know, focusing, did you truly understand what the market was expecting? Did you have a scenario before you actually entered the trade? And did you control your risk? You know, these are all things that really move towards a successful trade rather than a bad trade.
Yeah, process. I, to be fair, I've made money when I did stupid stuff. So that's never the measure, 100%. We'll leave it there. That Francis du Plessis, he's CEO at CFR Financial Group South Africa. Appreciate the early morning time. That's it for today. On Friday, we were chatting with Andile Jonas, here, of course, from Momentum Savings. We were talking around AI and investing. He loves chatbots, as do I, but not for help with finances. We asked you whether you thought that AI could help with your investing. Half of you said, yeah, great tech. Rest split between no chance and only if regulated. Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more certainty to navigate volatile market conditions. We're live every weekday morning, the MoneyWeb website and the app, 6:30 a.m. podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie Nobuchlin, Nicole Sabu, to you for listening, my guests for their time. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow. WhatsApp fees and the cost to SA business.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.